Hey, superhero and sci-fi fans, this is Sean Sipos, Adam Strange from Krypton.
And this is Blake Ritson, Brainiac from Krypton. You are listening to Comic Book Central.
Where comic books come to life!
Greetings one and all, and welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Wrapping up my series of Superman Celebration episodes today with a look back at my Q&A at the Metropolis, Illinois event with two of the stars of the sci-fi series Krypton, Sean Sipos and Blake Ritson. Now, Sean plays time-traveling superhero Adam Strange on the series. I should say eventual superhero. He's getting there. Blake portrays the supervillainous collector of worlds, Brainiac. Now, while in Metropolis, Illinois for the Superman Celebration, I got to sit down with these talented actors for a Krypton Q&A. We took audience questions, got to give away an amazing collector's item at the event. Talk about collecting. Brainiac collects. We had a collector's item there. Thanks to the fine folks at NBC Universal and Sci-Fi, they sent me something very, very cool. It's a replica of Superman's cape from the series. It was packed away in a sweet-looking Krypton box. It was amazing. If you've seen the series, you know the significance of Superman's cape in the television series. Basically, Sean's Adam Strange. He travels back through time to save Superman in the future. Something's happened. He's got the cape there. It's disappearing slowly, just like the picture of Marty McFly in Back to the Future. So if you think about that disappearing, you kind of get the same concept. So we had a replica cape there to give away to one of the fans in attendance at the Q&A. Oh, had such an amazing time. So I'm bringing you that audio today on today's episode. By the way, big thanks to Superman fan and Celebration attendee Sassy Ann Shenefield. Now, I'm not commenting on her demeanor. Sassy is her first name. I checked it out. Sassy by name, but quite helpful by nature, she is. She recorded the entire Q&A while she was there. She kindly offered her audio for today's show as an assist. I recorded it as well, but if you've ever been to Metropolis, Illinois for the Celebration, you know how hot it can be there. So on stage, it gets really hot. The volunteers had these huge fans on stage to keep those of us there on the stage cool. So very thankful for that. But Sassy had a different angle on things from the audience, a little bit better for picking up the speakers and obviously a lot closer to the audience as well. So she was able to get some of that. So an assist from Sassy on today's show. My thanks to her for getting us some more audio for today's episode to combine it and try to bring you folks the best audio available. If you haven't had a chance to listen to my previous Superman Celebration episodes, after today's show, you're going to want to go back and check them out. ComicBookCentral.net, that is the online hub for the show. Also, blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. iTunes, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Blueberry, Stitcher, Google Play, the Comic Book Central Lair, it is everywhere. Started things off with a preview episode of the Celebration with co-chair of the event, Carla Ogle, as well as Jim Hambrick, curator of the Super Museum in Metropolis. Then, Celebration guest of honor, Brandon Routh. Yes, Superman himself, the Man of Steel from Superman Returns. Before he traveled to Metropolis, he made a stop right here on Comic Book Central. You can hear my exclusive interview with Brandon Routh on episode 228. Then, last week, it was part one of my trip to Metropolis with a whole host of interviews on that episode. Authors, artists, collectors, Toddler Clark from Superman the movie, Aaron Smolinski, he dropped by. Official Metropolis Superman, Joshua Boltinghouse, he was here. So many super guests. And of course, at the very end, a brief preview with Sean and Blake about today's episode. So if you haven't heard those shows yet, you want to check them out. Celebrating 80 years of Superman all year long right here on Comic Book Central, you don't want to miss a moment of the fun. Oh, it is going to be a super packed year, that is for sure. Had some fun at the Superman Celebration with these two gents. First, check this out. Then, my Superman Celebration Krypton Q&A with Sean Sipos and Blake Ritson.
The story of my family is one of triumph and sacrifice. How we led a revolution against tyranny. Now it falls on my shoulders to save my world.
Someone from the future is coming to destroy Krypton. Because where I'm from, your grandson becomes the greatest hero of the universe.
The story of my family isn't about how we died. It's about how we lived.
The Sci-Fi Channel series Krypton is set two generations before the destruction of Superman's home planet. Sean Sipos plays Adam Strange, who travels through time and space to visit Kal-El's grandfather, Seg-El, and he presents Seg with a life and death choice: save Krypton or let it be destroyed in order to save his eventual grandson who becomes Superman. Now, as the story unfolds, we are also introduced to Brainiac, who becomes one of Superman's greatest foes. Blake Ritson brings Brainiac to life, and he also portrays the voice of Ra'al, ruler of Kandor. Now, their characters have celebrations of their own this year, 60th anniversaries to be exact. Brainiac first appeared in Action Comics issue 242 in the summer of 1958. He was created by Otto Binder and Al Plastino. Adam Strange made his first appearance a few months later in Showcase issue number 17, and he was created by Julius Schwartz and Murphy Anderson. As for the talented actors bringing these characters to life, Sean Sipos was born in Victoria, British Columbia. He made his on-screen debut in 2001 with a role in Special Unit 2, and he played a series regular on Maybe It's Me the same year. And you've seen him on shows like Melrose Place, ER, CSI Miami, and a brief but memorable role in the second season of Smallville. Now, Blake Ritson's acting career began on stage when he was only 13, debuting in White Chameleon at the Royal National Theatre. Over the years, he's often appeared on stage, and he's appeared in numerous television series in both the UK and the US, including three seasons of Da Vinci's Demons, where he first met eventual Krypton executive producer David Goyer.
Citizens of Metropolis and visitors from around the world, welcome. Welcome to the Krypton Q&A here at the Superman Celebration. Before we begin, how about a nice hand for all of the volunteers who have been working tirelessly to bring you the 40th anniversary of the Superman Celebration. My name is Joe Stuber, writer, producer, host of ComicBookCentral.net. On that podcast, I get a chance to talk to so many different individuals who bring comic books to life and movies, TV shows. I've tripped on all the guests here. I've had them on the show, with the exception of the two gentlemen that are about to take the stage. That changes today. A big hand for Sean Sipos and Blake Ritson from Krypton. I've established already that these guys are like the odd couple, so we are going to have some fun today as we're talking. And some of you may have noticed we have a giveaway today from Krypton. This is from the folks at Sci-Fi, from WB, from DC Comics, for the best question, the coolest question, the most Kryptonian question.
I'm looking forward to it. I have high expectations.
Okay. The heat is on for these guys. So whenever we turn it over to the audience questions at the end of this session, we're going to let you two gents
figure out. We need to decide this. This is a burden of responsibility.
If you do your job right, Sean, this thing will not disappear. It is Superman's cape from Krypton, so hopefully it won't disappear as we go through. Look, we're talking all about anniversaries this weekend. We're talking about the 80th anniversary of Superman, the 40th anniversary of the movie, of the event. I think quietly we sneak this in here. It's the 60th anniversary of Adam Strange and the 60th anniversary of Brainiac.
We're both 60 today. Make some noise. Make some noise. Thank you.
You look great for 60.
You're aging poorly.
All right, full disclosure on this. I was a guest on a podcast recently. They asked me about Krypton. It was coming up. It was 2 weeks before the premiere, and somebody asked me, what do you think about Krypton? Are you excited about it? And I said, I'm always excited about these things, but do we need it? I feel sorry about that. I was like, I'm not sure where it was going to go. We watched the first episode, my wife and I, and yes, we need this. We need this. It's like one of the greatest Superman shows ever. It's unbelievable. There's so much backstory on this thing. I didn't know whether it's like Game of Thrones, it's Kryptonian Game of Thrones, it's Back to the Future, it's all kinds of crazy things. So how are each one of you approached about the series? Did you have much of a Krypton knowledge in your background? Sean, we'll start with you for Adam Strange.
How were your approach about the series, and what did you know about it at the time? How was it pitched here?
I'm going to say that Blake's story is more interesting than mine. It's a basic auditioning process. You get the sides, which are scenes from the script, and you prep it, you put it down on tape, you send it, they watch it. If they like it, they call you back, and then you go through the process of casting, which eventually, if it's for a prominent role, then you have a thing called a screen test. You do the screen test, which is the studio and the network watches, and then they all deliberate and figure if they want to cast you or not. And that was the process for myself.
Did you know much about the character? I mean, what were some of the homework things that you did about it?
You know, I didn't know a whole lot about the character initially, but after I got it, DC sent me a big gift bag, a box essentially of Adam Strange comics. So I had a whole whack of comics, and I just poured through them endlessly. And then figured out what the through line was for the character and did my homework and portrayed him as best I could.
And Blake, you went full nerd on me back earlier because I mentioned about the 60th anniversary and you did a deep dive into the comic books. You went full geek on me and I was your nerd cred just went way up in my book. I was totally pleased.
Before I started shooting, I visited the DC offices out in LA and they gave me a huge stack. Like the motherlode of all Brainiac comics, to mainline, absorb all the information, to metabolize the information. And that's what I did. I treated it as my homework, I took it seriously, and I got really into it. I think playing a character like Brainiac, who is so iconic, that's had so many different iterations over the years, you just want to do it justice. And I feel like even if there's tiny details you can glean and glimpse and pull out of the comics and books, terrific. That's it's all been worth it.
But you knew the first appearance.
I did, number 242, 1958.
Just saying. This is unbelievable. I love the fact that you guys know about the comics and do a deep dive into these things. What was your audition process like? Because it's the character, seen the show. Hopefully everybody's seen the show, but it kind of goes through different iterations. I mean, you start like the voice of Raoul. Is that?
It's basically three different characters.
Yes.
The voice of Raoul. Then I play a character called, he's kind of the agent of Brainiac, or he's a vessel of Brainiac. He's a human form who's been infected by the nanotechnology and parasites of Brainiac. And then eventually I become the full-fat Brainiac, collector of worlds. For me it's been a hugely fun process.
Had you seen some of the Brainiac iterations before, like from small? Because it's not the, you kind of get the Geoff Johns version, which is very cool. But there's been animated versions. They had Super Friends with different things, and then obviously James Marsters from Smallville was a completely different
version.
Completely.
I mean, in a way, that was kind of like a self-aware human AI, human professor. So it couldn't be more different. I feel very honored to be the first person to play big, full-fat collector of worlds.
The better version is what you're saying.
The better version. I'll quote Sean on that.
Now this series took a little while to get off the ground, didn't it? Because it started, if you can kind of give us the genesis of it, because David Goyer, who we know wrote Batman Begins, Man of Steel, he comes into this, he's one of the creative forces behind the show. This kind of goes back to 2013.
So for me, this starts a lot earlier than that. So I was shooting a show called Da Vinci's Demons, which was created by David Goyer, where I played the villain. And I remember I think we were shooting the third season of that, he started talking to me about the show, and I was like, that sounds like a really cool premise for a show. What a really fun idea, really strong thrust. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but hadn't really thought about it. And then I just got an email out of the blue saying, how would you like to come and play the big bad on the show? And I was like, it sounds terrific. And then he said, I just want to run a couple of things past you. And he told me about the crazy twists and turns that I basically would be playing all these different paradigms of the same character, or different characters. And I was all in. I was like, this sounds phenomenal. And it has been enormous fun. Prodigiously fun.
And Sean, when did you first find out about it coming into it? Because it's, like I said, I think the development process, we had Man of Steel, 2013, we had all that Kryptonian stuff at the beginning. And it's kind of like feeding off of that, off Goyer's imagination for that. When did you sort of come into the process? Because it took a little while to shoot, then it was a year before they were promoting it?
Yeah, apparently they shot the pilot, and then they sort of reworked it and decided that they wanted Adam Strange in it. So there'd been almost a year since they had filmed the pilot when they decided to bring me on.
Okay, so Adam wasn't in the original pilot.
So we shot the original pilot in Belgrade, and then when we moved production to Belfast a year later, they realized that there was an Adam Strange-shaped hole in the center of the show, and they inserted
him. So they inserted me, yes.
But I think when you're watching it, because that was my concern coming in, that it's like, okay, is it going to be too, like, almost Shakespearean? Is it going to be all these, you know, kind of Game of Thrones-ish? Because there's, you play the character that is us.
Yeah.
You kind of drop, like, this kind of, like, a, you know, goofball guy in a Detroit Tigers, but he's, like, kind of a Magnum P.I. This thing.
Yeah.
So
no, he is our eyes and ears. He's the audience's eyes and ears. He's the human on the show. Essentially,
Were they realizing that there wasn't like a reference point for the audience?
Yes, that there wasn't something to ground the audience and go, oh, here's our eyes and ears. Here's us in this show, and it makes it hit home a little bit more, right? The interesting thing is that I'm playing the alien on the show, essentially, right?
You're not the only alien.
But how do you approach that, too? Because do you have a reference point? Because there's so many time travel things. I know there's elements of Back to the Future. There's elements of Terminator. There's elements of all these different things. Did you kind of have a reference point that you wanted to hang on to for the show? Because it's a completely different version of Adam Strange in this show than in the comics.
Well, I think that any rendition on a character or a story is slightly different than any comic that you read. Otherwise, the audience would know exactly what's going to happen and they would check out. But I did look at films. I did look at films with time travel, like the Terminator, the Kyle Reese character, how he goes through, how that affects him. There's similar storylines. I'm there. I travel back in time to save Superman's grandfather. Kyle Reese is going back in time to save John Connor. And, you know, so there's similarities there to draw upon, but obviously you don't want to copy anybody. You want to make it your own. So I used it as a springboard, so to speak.
Do you know his backstory and his arc? How much of the character do you know? Obviously, you're not going to, you know, spoil anything for season 2. By the way, congratulations. Season 2 picked up.
Yeah.
So we have Krypton on the way. Did they kind of tell you the arc of where both of your characters, like where we want to, what's their end game?
I think there's often that they have an idea, they have an overarching structure, but they're kind of malleable, the storyline. Sometimes they discover things during the shoot which are working and they play into that. We have a very wonderful showrunner called Cameron Welsh who lets us into the kind of the big plot points of the story, and he'll kind of let us into a certain amount, and then they kind of massage it into a kind of shape from that. Mm. So we know bits, but not all of it sometimes.
What surprised you most about, because there's been so many Superman series, so many different versions of the character we're going through. What surprised you the most when you read the scripts, when you found out what they were doing, when they're handing you scripts for episodes 5, 6, 7?
I mean, I think just being in a show where they're happy to expand the DC universe to this extent. You know, this isn't just an homage to the Superman canon. This is dealing with a time in Kryptonian lore which isn't very well known. So I think they've had a certain amount of flexibility. So just the creativity of it, I think, has been the big surprise for me. And then towards the end of the season, just the constant twists and turns has been very fun. And also, I really, I don't know about you guys, but I really enjoy the kind of the moral ambivalence of the show. It's not always clear cut who are the goodies and who are the baddies. I think it makes it for a very interesting and fun ride that you don't know quite who you're rooting for all the time. Like this guy, goodie or bad? You tell me.
We don't really know fully. I mean, outside of I have to save Superman.
Yeah.
We don't really know a lot. We've seen him on Ran, I think.
We haven't seen Adam on Ran. I mean, we've seen him on the Ranian starship, yes.
Okay, is that... Okay. Where are you, man? Like, where are you on this thing? Where did you end up?
I liken it to, you know, I drew from a bunch of different places to create this character. One of them was Indiana Jones. I think he has that kind of Indiana Han Solo vibe. And this is kind of like Indiana before he really dons his hat, essentially. So this is before he's really stepped into his hero boots. So we haven't seen him essentially become that hero yet until... I think that the very beginnings of it is when he sacrifices or puts himself in harm's way to save Say. I think that's sort of like, it shows you a glimmer of the heroics that he has.
So anybody that hasn't seen the series yet, how would you pitch it to them? How would you describe the show to them? What can they expect? Because they can stream it now. It's on Sci-Fi On Demand. It's on different things, so if you want to go check it out, it's only 10 episodes, you can binge it pretty quickly and get caught up. But how would you pitch it? Just exactly that. How would you tell somebody to tune into Krypton?
I've heard Sean do a brilliant pitch. I'm going to pass over there.
I was about to pass it to you.
What's your elevator pitch for the show?
Oh, man.
Because you're basically, this takes place basically 200 years before Superman is sent to Earth. We're going back, but then all of a sudden, Marty McFly in a Detroit Tigers baseball cap shows up, and we have to save Superman.
It's the story of the civilization that gave birth to Superman and the race to keep him alive forever.
That's a pretty good one. And there's a big bag of green.
That was an elevator going up one floor. Now Sean's going to get 20 floors.
And there's a big bad green monster that tries to thwart those plans. And then another man, I don't know if you can give that one away, though. The other one that shows up. Can't give that away.
The one thing I will say about the show, if you haven't watched it, there are endless twists and turns. There are a lot of DC characters showing up that you will know and love. A lot of Easter eggs, a lot of surprises. Mm. And I think going forward, a lot of the Easter eggs that we've already set up are going to pay
dividends
later. Yeah. So, watch with attention, watch with vigilance. Be assiduous in your watching.
I think even the fact that we're getting these characters too, and you've got Doomsday in the series now, which we've seen him in different things, but I mean, this is really the one that we've got from the comic books. I think anybody that loves the comic books, can you talk a little bit about, can you give us any hints for season two? Where we might be headed?
I don't know if we know. We've seen various kind of sketches in terms of Doomsday, you know?
I mean, you'd said it before, the big spoiler, we are in it.
I mean, what spoilers can I give for season two? There may be another world we explore in season two. We may glimpse Kryptonopolis, another city, which will have a very different look and feel. We might also meet Brainiac's pet, the space monkey Coco. That's not true. Or is it? This is how rumors get started. I'm just saying. I'm putting it out there. I will accept nothing. The rumor did not start here.
Let's get a little bit of background on both of you, too, because I want to find out what got both of you interested in acting to begin with. What were some of your inspirations? A lot of people see movies and TV shows when they grow up and they think, maybe I can do it. What were your inspirations growing up to getting both of you in acting?
Do you want time to think?
Lack of options.
I mean, I was lucky. I kind of fell into it. I started when I was very young, at 12 or 13. I was spotted in a school play and asked to do a play at the National Theatre by Sir Richard Eyre. He asked me back to do another play. Then someone saw me in that, see if I would do a television show, then a film, and it just kind of progressed from there. I never really decided to act. It just happened, and it's always been a great fun, and I love the kind of camaraderie. Despite this reprobate who sat next to me, you meet some lovely people in your journey through, and I'm having a ball, so I have no reason not to love every day.
And then Sean, what got you into acting? And I think one of your early roles was also in the Superman universe too, right?
Yeah.
Did you have an appearance on Smallville?
I did. I had one scene.
That's a Smallville.
I can't believe
that's
it.
Very small,
it was, yeah, it was
microscopic film.
I had one scene.
And that was
I don't even think I had any lines, to be honest. I think I just kissed a girl on the show.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, you did.
And people at the end, so people are like, I loved you on Smallville.
Were you billed as kissing man in the credits? Were you getting kissing man?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think it was actually Boy Toy.
Teenager or something.
I think the character's name was Boy Toy.
Was it?
Yeah, Boy Toy.
I think it's technically that.
Everyone strives for that. I think a lot of people, they searched internationally for that role.
So what got you into acting? What were some of your inspirations?
You know, to be honest, I didn't really have any. I grew up on an island in Canada, and I didn't think that acting was an option. I was going to be a doctor, and I just kind of got into it. My dentist receptionist offered it as a means to have fun, and then it quickly turned into something that caught my attention, and I went, how do you get good at this? Can this be something that I can be good at? And then I realized that it's an inward journey, and it kind of, for me anyway, it made me a better person, because it made me look at myself and look at what triggers me and what blocks I have and everything else. So it sort of helped me to become a little bit more self-realized, I guess.
Did you, this is, I can come to question it. Did you watch a lot of television growing up?
No.
Okay, that explains a lot.
I was the kid that was like wandering through the woods alone, and then reading. That was me. I didn't have many friends growing up. That's why I'm glad that you're my friend now.
Sweet.
We have no choice.
Sweet. Until they have to battle on the show, then it just turns ugly. So, I tell you what, we're going to turn that over to the audience. We've got some questions here. I think we've got, is it Supergirl running around with the microphone?
I mean, that doesn't shut it down. Yes, there we go. I can see 27 Supergirl, so that doesn't shut it down.
All right, the best questions. We're going to keep track. So remember, if you've got a good Krypton question or a great question, you could end up with Superman's cape when it's all set.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hello again.
I have two questions.
Excellent.
One, like, do you ever intend to come to Broadway?
That's a very good question. I mean, I haven't done a play for a little while, for about 6 or 7 years. I used to do a lot of theatre. I've just been very busy recently, but I would love to come to Broadway one day. It'd be a lot of fun. Yeah, if the right project. I always think everything's got to be right with the play. You want the right part, the right director, the right play. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't rule it out. The right project. Loved it.
And my other question is, what is it like
filming
in Ireland?
Love it. Love it. Oh, like, the crews are delightful, lovely restaurants, it's very quaint, you can do day trips. Really, I'm a big fan. You like it?
Yeah, I like it. Nice people.
I don't know, he sounds lukewarm. I'm not believing. No, maybe you can't see it
like
from the audience.
I like it.
But I think he's looking a bit glazed, and like he's not really believing this. I feel like Sean's an autopilot. Is it like Belfast?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
He said it sincerely that time.
Yeah.
What does acting in your characters mean to you guys?
I think it means the world to me.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's our form of making a living. It's, I guess it's our purpose in life is to be a storyteller.
But I think for most actors, I can't talk for everyone, but it's a huge creative outlet. You have a quite kind of nomadic experience where you're constantly jumping from one group of friends to another, and It's a very exciting, visceral, creative experience, and I think most people who do it, unless they become very jaded and cynical, love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, you know, it's an exciting, fulfilling, creative, collaborative world. So I think it means a lot to a lot of people.
I concur.
Hello, it's nice to meet you. My name's Kyle.
It's nice to meet you too.
Well, I actually wanted to ask because I've studied to be a film director for a lot of years, and soon I'm actually going to be applying for a job to work at DC to, you know, do certain shows or
reviews. Good luck.
Yeah.
Let us know if you need a reference.
Well, I actually wanted to ask more about your show specifically because I, you know, watched your show and all that, but was there like any bad experiences? Like, was there a day where you guys came into the office and it's like, oh, what do I have to do for this? And, you know, like, was there something, like, you know, going wrong that particular day or something like that? Because I want to know everything about, you know, all behind-the-scenes stuff for you guys.
I mean, I don't know about you. I found it an incredibly fruitful working environment just because it was very collaborative. And I suppose that's one takeaway I would have from being on any show is the more collaborative the environment is, A, the happier everyone is, and B, the more fun everyone has. Because if you're in a show where the best idea wins, it doesn't matter where that idea comes from. It makes everyone constantly creatively engaged. So I think people have bad experiences on show where there's someone locking down everyone creatively, and that just wasn't the case on Krypton. Everyone had a voice, everyone was listened to, and I think with the result, everyone felt very passionate and creatively engaged with it. So I can't speak about a worse day. Did you have any bad days?
No, I don't think that there was really any bad days. I think what Blake's saying is right. You know, I was once told by a really great director that there are no bad ideas, period. Even if you think it is the worst idea in the world, that idea can trigger another idea, which then triggers another idea, which then triggers a brilliant idea, and then you make progress.
No bad days in the makeup chair, Blake?
I mean, I had long days in the makeup chair. I mean, when we started the makeup, I remember a day, it was about 7 or 8 hours with 3 people working on me. And then you walk on set and take a few photos and I go, looks great. And then you spend another 2 hours taking it off. So they're long days, but at the same time, there's something, you know, that particular makeup for Brainiac was worked on for about 4 months by the company Legacy. They came up with this amazing sculpture, all these, they've been so many different kind of finessing processes. That to finally see it on was incredibly exciting. So even though it's very long, it's also very fulfilling. I think if it hadn't looked as good as it had, it would have been frustrating, but because it looked kind of amazing, and everyone had done such a fantastic job. It was very exciting. So, yeah.
Hi, so my name's Jordan. This question's for Blake. I just wanted to know about how it may have been challenging or interesting to play two characters, one the voice of Rao and then also Brainiac, because I know one of those characters kind of wanted Krypton to prosper because you were in charge, but then Brainiac wanted to come in and destroy the world.
Completely. I mean, the trickiness I had was trying to set... I always thought of it as three characters, so I thought of it as there's the voice of Rao, who is this kind of faceless man who is the leader of the theocracy on Candor. And then you have him when he's infected, who's this kind of, he's infected, but he's a kind of human form who's been appropriated. He's not Brainiac. And I was trying to find how to separate full fat Brainiac from this kind of agent of Brainiac. So that was kind of interesting. And the makeup was really helpful for that, actually. The makeup changed. It was constantly kind of mutating to suggest his gradual slipping further and further into Brainiac's clutches. So I really enjoyed it, but I enjoyed the challenge of finding little ways of differentiating them physically. And I think just being on a show where you get a chance to play three different characters is a blast, because no 2 days are the same. So I love the challenge. I hope I'm playing seven characters next season.
Three paychecks? Sorry? Three paychecks?
300 paychecks.
Yes.
First of all, I wanted to thank you guys very much for coming out and for your hard work on season one. You were both fantastic. Can't wait for season two. So my question is, I know you guys can't say much about season two, but where would you both personally like to see your characters go in season two? If it was up to you, if you just had your dream for the season, what would you like to do? What do you think would be fun for your characters?
What I'd like to do, I think Brainiac, he just wants to have like a nice chill afternoon. Just going down the street, he sees a pet shop, he sees a little collar in the window. He says, it could come in handy. And then he learns of Doomsday, he goes back, he domesticates Doomsday, he gets himself a pet. Just a little pet, just to keep him entertained. If there's no Coco, I want a Doomsday. That's what I want.
I think for me, I'd really like to go into Adam Strange's backstory. Take it to Thanagar, get into the wars there, and really sort of see the hero that he is.
Actually, one thing I would like, I'd like Brainiac to meet Adam Strange. I'd like some scenes with Sean. Yeah. That'd be fun.
What are the odds of that happening in season two?
I don't know. I mean, we don't really know. It could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like quite often when you have a show like this, in the writer's room, they have all the characters up on the board, and they often look out for interesting interactions that haven't been played out. So I think there's a chance of it at some point.
They have an end game, they have the arc, but yeah. Then they have to do those fill-in things in between, and those are the ideas that come
I mean, to let you into a secret, when I first met David Goyer and was talking about this, he told me, who knows if it'll get there or if it'll follow this, but he told me an arc that follows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons of where he imagines it will go. So these are in very broad brushstrokes.
Yeah.
And
that's in your
I mean,
brain.
Some of the things are insane. If we get there, amazing. So we have to keep going just so we can pay it off. But there are some huge plans on the horizon if we get there.
All right, so I have a question for Sean. We know that Adam Strange has the power to time travel, of course, and you were Chloe's boy toy in Smallville. Can we say that was Adam Strange before he went to Krypton?
You've discovered the mastermind that is Warner Brothers.
That's actually when Sean was cast to Krypton.
Yeah, that's what it was. So in 12 years...
He wasn't actually initially in that scene, but they time-traveled Sean back to that scene. And they inserted it. That is the power of Warner Brothers.
How intimidating is it to cross over from, I guess, for you from Smallville over to Krypton, and for you to come into Krypton as a villain, big shoes
from Broadway. off Broadway, triple off Broadway,
triple off Broadway. I mean, I feel like when you're playing an iconic character, you just want to do your best. You want to kind of, you know, there's a lot of people who know this character, who love this character, especially when the character hasn't been seen on screen in this form before. So you just do everything you can to try and make it as good as you can. So I do take the kind of the responsibility seriously, and I do kind of everything I can to make it work. But I'm sure you have a similar feeling.
Yeah, likewise. I think there's a responsibility that needs to be had, but at the same time, I think if it's taken too seriously, then it strips away the ability to play. Yeah, the fun in it. So
there is also, I don't know about you, but there's a point where you do all the research, you do all the homework, you learn everything about the character, and then you throw it all away, and you go, but this is our iteration, this is our universe, this is the particular version we're going to commit to. And, you know, especially when you're playing a character that has lots of different conflicting versions, you know, I'm not Vril Brox, I'm not a stream of sentient molecules, I'm not a living metal skeleton, I am this particular version. So once you commit to a version, you just have to kind of follow it through.
What is it like getting in deep into the characters of Adam Strange and Brainiac? I mean, Brainiac is so intellectual. And how far down do you guys have to dig to kind of get into that mindset to make sure that you give the audience what you want to portray to them?
Well, Brainiac is a 12th level intellect. I'm only an 11th, so it's been a stretch. I mean, the whole of 20th century Earth is a sixth, but it's a logarithmic scale, so I don't know, it's difficult. I can't be Brainiac in the sense of being that superpowered intelligence, but all you can do is kind of find a way of communicating that, visually articulating that on screen. And I think there's a lot of fun to be had out of that. You know, playing a character with a range of super abilities is great fun. I've been acutely aware of going through a lot of TV shows of people with superpowers and going, how do we do things differently? What hasn't been done before? I know how this guy does telekinesis, how can I do it differently? So finding a new visual language for that has been very fun. And I think all the creatives at the top of the show, the directors, the producers, the showrunner, have been very on board with that. Let's make this show new and fresh. Let's freshly mint these superpowers.
In terms of me stepping into Adam Strange's shoes, there's a certain amount of the homework that is a little bit painful, I suppose, but also joyous. So one big through line that I took from the comics with Adam is that they consistently spoke of how much life he has in him, how much levity he has. Because Man is a very dystopian place, it's militaristic, it's very similar to Krypton. So I figured if you actually look up what's strange, the definition of strange in the dictionary, it encompasses who he is pretty accurately. So I just went about finding the joy.
There seems to be a little Flash Gordon in him too. Is that fair? Yeah, I mean, you're a fan of Flash Gordon? It seems to be a little bit of that coming into it.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Hi guys, my name's Andrew. I want to thank you all again for coming here, breaking this heat.
Thank you.
So my question is, Brainiac has a very impressive, maybe too large collection of planets, things he likes to collect. Do you collect anything? And if so, you have a prize thing that you own.
I mean, I'm quite well cast. I actually collect collections. I have lots of collections. I collect lots of slightly esoteric things. So I collect 1930s cocktail paraphernalia. I collect Edwardian children's books. I collect Georgian doodles. I collect 19th century guitars. Lots of things. Yeah, so I my parents are antique dealers, so ever since I was tiny, I've accumulated strange artifacts through time and space. So I can associate with him wanting to collect things.
For Sean, do you know if the writers gave any thought at all to how Adam can just come to Krypton and not be affected by the atmosphere or the gravity?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they did. It's Rannian technology. You know, as the same as at the beginning of the season where he's there, and then near the end of the season, you realize through flashbacks, okay, this is how he got the technology, this is what's happened. Sardath was not going to let him come, and then he talked his way into it, and, you know, they start divulging things. So, you know, that's kind of the stages that they're going with.
I thought you were just holding your breath.
Yeah. he did a lot of weight training.
I mean, the other thing was, are they going to ever explain what happened to Krypton? Like, why there's this cataclysm and why all the cities are going
again? I think we will. I mean, especially if we expand the planet, as I think there may be a plan to, and look into Kryptonopolis, I suspect we will find out a lot more.
Yeah.
I can't vouch for the show, but from the comics, this is all about the explosion of one of the Sons of Ra'al. One of the four suns exploded. So whether this is what we do in the show, I don't know, but that's from my understanding of the comics. You guys probably know better than me, but...
Hello, thanks for coming out today. This is a question for both of you.
while playing these characters, what effect do you think they have on the world? And, like, do you think they're changing the world in any way?
Yes. I'm making people sleep more uneasily. I'm giving people cheese dreams, fever dreams, hallucinations. I'm just haunting people's imaginations. I want people to see Brainiac staring back from dark shadows and empty wardrobes. So I like to think I'm changing the world with one scare at a time.
I think I've helped the Detroit Tigers fan base.
The best since Magnum P.I.
Uh-huh.
The best since Magnum P.I.
Yeah, they sent me the season tickets every year for life now.
Is that
true?
No,
they didn't.
I was going to say, there's no way that happened. How cool would that be, though?
That would be pretty
good. You would be a spokesperson for the Detroit.
I could do it.
Yeah, send you a title.
So all the way through, even through Comic-Con, when you guys were promoting the show before it aired, you talked a lot about there was going to be a lot of other characters, and Hawk Girl was mentioned a few times, but then I never saw Hawk Girl on the show. Was it a late cut? Did it get filmed, or did it just never happen? Do you guys know?
I think the gallery of characters became a little more busy just before started shooting. And I think they just wanted to make sure that every character landed correctly, had enough time to bed in the show and explore them. So for now, Hawk Girl has been pushed off. I have a strong suspicion we might be seeing Hawk Girl in the future, because I know there were plans. And I think there was even some concept art drawn up for her, which I booked. So yeah, I think Hawk Girl may well turn up.
Hi, congratulations about being picked up again for another season.
Thank
you. Happy about that.
Thank you, us too.
Question is, when you guys are on the set mode, is there any kind of like practical jokes? I mean, how was you guys on the set? Is there any kind of practical
Sean
jokes?
Travels everywhere with a mobile whoopee cushion. Everywhere he goes, every Kryptonian rock, every space seat, you can't move for them.
There's no place to stay.
Sean is, I think. Are you mischievous? No, I think Sean is mischievous on set.
Yeah, and whenever Blake's on set, he drops some stink bombs.
If you weren't on Krypton, or when you're Valentine, you weren't on Krypton, is there a dream role? What would your dream role be for you guys?
That's a good question. I mean, I have a penchant for playing villains. I enjoy playing villains. I'd love to have a crack at Riddler or Joker one day. I think it would be an absolute ball. I'd have a blast. What about you?
I think I'd like to play a villain in a Western.
That's a good call, isn't it? Have you been watching Westworld?
Yeah, I have.
Ed Harris. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah,
so
this isn't
your question. It's just an observation.
Godless as well.
Sorry?
Godless. Jeff Daniels, yes. He's
no.
Fantastic.
The answer remains
he
no.
He really is like fantastic. But, like, okay. Quite frightening.
Hi. I was actually going to ask if you could be anyone past, present, or future in a film, TV, or on theater. Who would it be? But that one kind of got taken.
Well, Sundance Kid for me.
Oh, that's a good one. I feel like Robert De Niro has done some amazing performances. I don't any of his kind of masterful performances. I wouldn't want to read credit. I feel like he does such an amazing job in kind of Taxi Driver. Things you wouldn't want to go there and do it again. It'd be horrifying to try and tackle that. But yeah, I don't know if I'd ever want to redo exactly what someone else has done in a hypothetical world where the film hadn't been made with them. It would be fun to play those parts.
Yeah.
We'll take one more question, and then we'll do the giveaway.
Hi, guys. My name's Kyle. I'm an aspiring actor, and, you know, seeing you guys come up here today, again, thank you guys so much for coming out. And now, my question for you guys is, you know, I get very discouraged sometimes when I'm auditioning for roles and stuff like that. Now, when you guys get turned down, or have you ever been turned down from a role? What role?
Everyone has been turned down. Everyone. Robert De Niro has been turned down. There is no actor on the planet that hasn't been turned down.
Now, I mean, what's your advice for, like, you know, kind of getting over that, like, and what kind of characters, like, have you, like, been turned down from? Just kind of curious.
I mean, I think it's really just an attitude of kind of onwards and upwards. I think learning from the things you don't get, making all of that part of the journey to the jobs you do get, making it a positive experience. You're not right for every part. I wouldn't cast me in some of the parts I've gone up for, but you can still kind of get something from the process. So I think taking it as a positive every time you get turned down, as long as you're committed to it when you go into it, is what I'd say.
Yeah, I think he's right, and I think also let go of, once you put your work in and you go in and you do it, let it go. Don't wait for the phone to ring, don't pine for the role, let it go. And what helped me actually was going in with the attitude of, maybe I don't want this, but I want to help these people. Maybe there's something that I do that helps enlighten something for this project.
So do the audition for yourself. Do it as you would do it on set, in a room, in the stage, whatever. Do it for yourself. And if you're proud of the work you're doing there, you've achieved that as an end.
Also, one other thing I'd say is read good literature.
Oh, for sure.
It works your imagination.
What do you say, gents? You want to give a cape away?
We need to confirm.
You guys want to chat about it and say the whole American Idol thing here?
Andrew, we would like to reward you with a cape. Would you like to come
up? I had a feeling that was coming.
Yeah.
To ask Brady, I feel he collects.
Good one.
That's pretty good. Thank you very much. Good question.
You guys, yes. Let me sign it here.
Great question. Thank you all for coming.
Put a big hand for Sean Seymour and Blake Wilson.
Thank you.
Season 2 of Krypton on the way.
All right, Blake mentioning that he'd like to play the Riddler or the Joker. Okay, I think we all love that. Great question to prompt that answer. And why not? Why shouldn't he? Look, if Chris Evans can play two Marvel superheroes, Johnny Storm and Captain America, why can't Blake portray two DC supervillains? That would be a very cool thing. For now, we know that both he and Sean will be back for season 2 of Krypton. That drops on Sci-Fi in 2019. Big thanks to Sean Sipos and Blake Ritson for a super Q&A. And for giving the fans of Metropolis a weekend to remember that it was. My thanks also to Sassy Ann Shenefield for the super assist, Andrew Stewart for asking that cape-winning question at the Q&A, and of course, my thanks to Carla Ogle for asking me to be a part of the event this year. I had such a fun time. Congrats to her and her team of super friends, each and every year bringing us the Superman celebration, but man, pulled out all the stops this year. 40th anniversary for the event. It was definitely a weekend to remember for everyone there, for myself, for my wife. We had a blast. Thousands of attendees. Great job, as always. Hoping to bring Comic Book Central back to Metropolis next year. Would love to make this a regular event for taking the show on the road. We'll see what happens, but I would love to get back for the 41st. Hey, quick check in the mailbag. Heard from friend of the show and Superman Celebration cosplayer Scott Doran. He writes, "Hey, Joe, I'm glad that you and your wife made it home safely from Metropolis. I enjoyed the brief interview with Joshua Boltinghouse, the official Superman of Metropolis, and how he stays in character at the event. Every year that we go to the celebration, he always says, 'Hello, Mr. Doran.' As you know, he called me Scott when he was with you and your wife and John Newton as I saw you at the restaurant in town. Josh is a great guy. As for the Krypton actors, they were great as well. I should have worn my Silver Age Brainiac costume as I did last year with Comic Book Central alum James Marsters. Anyway, hope you have a great summer, and you'll be hearing from me again in the lair. Hey, thanks for writing in, Scott. Yeah, that was a very cool night to close out my trip in Metropolis. Always good seeing you there, and the listeners had such a blast. If I'm there next summer, I hope to see you there as Brainiac. That would be awesome. I can't wait to see what your cosplay would be for that. Hey, if you have a Superman celebration memory, or you just want to let me know what's on your mind, drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab at the website, or you can leave a voicemail at the website as well. I definitely want to hear from you. All right, super guys and gals, that is a wrap for today. There's this cape hanging here in the lair. It's slowly disappearing. I got to take care of this. I might have to go meet up with Sean and do some time traveling to set things right. There's a lot to do. But fear not, I shall return on time, because next time on Comic Book Central, I got to attend a super spectacular event right here in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio. It was to celebrate one of my faves, Mad Magazine. I'm sure it's one of your faves as well. And 7 decades of satire in Mad Magazine. The event took place at the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library and Museum. The Mad Magazine exhibit, it continues through this fall. Guests from the world of Mad were there for the premiere of the exhibit, including legendary cartoonist Sergio Aragonés. You are going to hear from Sergio and many others when I bring you my visit to the Mad Magazine exhibit. That is headed your way next week. Until then, don't tug on Superman's cape, especially if it's disappearing. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Hey, Chloe, I need the...
Don't worry, Clark. We're done.
Can I get your number?
Why? The thrill is gone.
Hey,
Who was that?
I don't know. I met him in the hall. Thought he was cute. Asked him if he wanted to do some investigative reporting.
Chloe, what's going on? Are you okay?